KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
On the first week, he said, Ike, don't worry about what you know and don't know. Don't worry about who you know or don't know. You take care of people, you're going to do great in this business. And that was the best advice that I could have. Just take care of people. Listen to them. Help them get to what they want. Help them achieve their goals. And that's been my driving force.
And our guest this week is Ike Richmond, one of the premier public relations people in the city of Philadelphia. He is the founder and owner of Ike Richmond Communications. Had a long career with Comcast Spectacor, Flyers Sixers concerts. He's promoted it all. Ike, thanks so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here, Matt. Thanks for having me.
So you have been waist deep in so many of the things. We were kind of talking off the air of how Philadelphia has been front and center. What has 2026 been like for you? We crossed paths at the PGA Championship. You were doing World Cup stuff. Like, has this been the busiest year of your career, either with Comcast Spectacor or with your own company?
I think the word is exciting. I think in summary, this has been a very exciting year in Philadelphia. I've been blessed to be part of some of the big events, but this has been a milestone year. I don't think we'll ever see anything like it. And I could remember very vaguely the bicentennial year because it was unprecedented then to see the NBA All-Star Game, 2 weeks later the NHL All-Star Game, 2 weeks later the NCAA Final Four, all at the Spectrum, and then the Major League Baseball All-Star Game that summer. I never thought we'd see anything like it, and we did. We had the World Cup. That was six matches, not just one, six. We had the Baseball All-Star Game here. We had NCAA men's first and second round games. We had the PGA Championship, which was really a week's worth of excitement in Philadelphia. You had the Flyer playoff run. We never thought we'd see something like that this season. They had, what, a 4% chance of making the playoffs in February? We made it so that March and April and into May became electric, and then that led right into the PGA Championships, which then led us into the World Cup, and now we got into the Baseball All-Star Game, and it's not done. I kid with Larry Needle at PHL Sports. We have the next four. We have the UFC Championship coming up in August. I think we have the Army-Navy game. I think there's still an NCAA Women's Regional in Philadelphia and an NCAA Lacrosse Championship. So this is an exciting time to be in Philadelphia, and that's just sports. If you look at everything else we have here, we just had a sold-out Noah Kahan show at Citizens Bank Park. That was the largest crowd ever for a concert in that stadium. And we had the Roots reuniting with Jay-Z at a new venue, the Belmont Plateau, which was immense. So this has been a special year for Philadelphia. And you asked me my involvement. I've been blessed to be across many of those events, not all of them, but it's been remarkable and probably the most exciting. I wouldn't say the busiest because I love being busy. That's just normal for me, but it's been exciting.
All those events you've been involved in, I'm curious how it works as a PR person, PR with your own company. Well, we'll just take the PGA Championship just for one example here. Is that something, do they reach out to you and say, hey, we would like to contract with you to do X, Y, and Z? Is it something that you reach out to them, say, hey, I'm well established here. If there's any service I can provide, please let me know. How does it work that you're able to connect with events like this?
It's a combination, Matt. It really is a combination of being confident in the skills that I have, the resources that I have, the relationships that I have, and the knowledge of this market to approach an organization like the PGA Championship and say, hey, I could be advantageous for you to be a part of your team. I'm not saying I can do it all, but I'd like to be part of your team. How can I assist you? How can I help you network here in Philadelphia and establish yourselves? So it kind of is a combination, but I like to think that my reputation is out there and people know who I am. And I hope that my network of people, that if somebody should say, hey, we're looking for somebody in Philadelphia that works at this high level of intensity with a lot of media, especially international or national media, would say, Ike is your guy, or Ike Richmond Communications is the team you want to work with. So I think it's a combination, but it's also tapping my personal network of people saying, hey, who are you talking to? Who are you working with? Reach out to the PHL Sports. I mentioned Larry Needle and Greg Karen at the PHL CVB and talking to them. Who are you hearing from? Who are you networking with? What are they saying? And just having these regular conversations and then being at the right place at the right time.
We see the final product, the World Cup, the matches, the PGA Championship, the weekend. But these are months, if not years, in the making. Kind of take people behind the curtain without giving away any state secrets. Once you come on board with an event, how often are you working on it? Is it every day? Is it weekly? You've obviously got multiple things on your plate at any one time. But who are you talking to? How long are you talking? What are some of the things that you're discussing? Are you more, hey, we should do this? Or are you more, is it more reactive? Like they tell you, we want X, Y, and Z, and you say, okay, collaborative, somewhere in the middle. Like, tell us all about that.
I think it's a lot of listening at first. Tell me your vision for being here in Philadelphia. What are you hoping to achieve? What are your goals from a media perspective? What are your goals from a community relations perspective? What are your goals for getting the word out there and listening closely and intently to what they are, and then utilizing the relationships that I have, the resources that I have, the vision that I have in my creativity to say, okay, we can do this to achieve everything that you want to do. And then sometimes it's a little bit of like, I don't know if Ike really knows everything we want, but it's convincing them that, yes, I do, and listening and then making it work and then showing them that what we can do together, we're going to win and we're going to achieve your goals together. And it, for me, it's about collaboration. And I never say, I can do this. I say, we can do this. Let's do this together. And how can I help you? I've been in this market my entire life. My professional career is over 30 years of working closely with the media in this market. So I have the relationships and I can say, let's go meet a KYW News Radio, and I could bring you in and show you all the key people here at the radio station, and then let's talk to other people within the Odyssey family. Let's start there, and then let's take it to the next layer or the next TV outlet or the next print medium or the next website. So it's listening, seeing how we can envisionize this, and then taking it out and making it work. And you asked a question. You said, how long out is this? It depends. For PGA Championship, I got brought in around March 1, and the event was not until mid-May. So we started working regularly, daily in March. When I'm working on something and I'm on the phone with you or I'm doing a Zoom with you, you're the only event that I'm working on. When I hang up with you, I can get back to some of my other clients, but I don't mix those clients up. I stay focused. I use the time that I'm on with you to focus on your event and to achieve success for you. And I like to think that that is a success for all.
You're so ingrained and so familiar with the Philadelphia market. I'm curious, how often does a client for an event, whatever, come to you and say X, Y, and Z? And are there situations where you go, that's not going to work here? That's not going to, and I don't mean in a rude way, but just like the way the city is wired, what you want is probably not conducive to success. Why don't we try this? Does that happen at all?
I don't like to say I know better than you. That's never been my motto. I like to say, hey, in past experiences, we've tried it that way before and it hasn't really worked. So if we kind of modify your idea and make it Philly-ish and try to do it the way it may work in Philadelphia, I think it could succeed. And we've had great luck with that. We kidded at an event recently where somebody said, this is a signature event. This is a steak and cheese that we're going to sell at the event. And I said, let me just remind you, if you want to be successful, call them cheesesteaks here. I won't say what the event is, but we changed it pretty quickly. So there are times when we do say, let's try it slightly different or let's try it this way. I try to steer away from doing things in this time of the year on a Friday because everybody's shorebound. Or if they don't go to the shore, they're going to the Poconos or they're going somewhere. But nobody's around on a Friday in Philadelphia in the summertime. So I would say, let's try to avoid Friday, maybe even avoid Monday as people are coming back. Let's try to do something on a Tuesday. Or they say, hey, we think this would be great. Let's try this at this location. And I say, that may be better for the Rocky Steps. That might be better with the backdrop of the city of Philadelphia. I think we could blend this again. It's again, I'm being repetitive, but collaboration is key. listening is key, focusing on what they want, and then lending in some of my insight. And that's been the success formula for me.
Mentioned you're now Ike Richmond Communications, but before that, that long career at Comcast Spectacor. I think you started Ike Richmond Communications 2017?
That is correct.
Why did you decide to go out on your own?
Ed Snyder, our chairman at the time, had just passed away. And Ed used to say, take what you do well and grow it. That was his motto. And he was no longer going to be our chairman. He had passed away. And I thought this was actually the perfect time to break off on my own and say, okay, let's take what we do well and grow it. So I was already entrenched in helping the hockey team or the basketball team or concerts or live events. Maybe I can make a career of doing that as my own and representing those same people. And I'm blessed today to still represent Comcast Spectacor and the Philadelphia Flyers, as well as many other companies. So I'm still very active with the Comcast Spectacor family and the Philadelphia Flyers. And it's been a remarkable career pivot that I did, and I'm grateful for it. And I get to do more things now that I'm not locked up into an office. I can go out and do more things and work with more people, and I'm not confined to a restricted schedule or not.
Once you start on your own, what were some of the challenges? Obviously, the work, 95% of it is the same thing you were doing, but now it's under your own umbrella. But you're also the one signing off now. In a lot of cases, you're not going to somebody and saying, hey, should we do this? You're the one deciding, are we going to do this? Like, what was that transition to go from member of the group to leader of your own group?
At Comcast Spectacor, we always knew what was next, what was ahead of us. You knew the calendar of events. You could see the future. But when we were Ike Richmond Communications, you now have to create that future. When I was at Comcast Spectacor, I could see a mile down the road. I could see 10 miles down the road. At Ike Richmond Communications, you might only see 500 feet down the road. So you have to keep recreating the next 500 feet and keep chasing new business. Because at Comcast Spectacor, the business was there. At Ike Richmond Communications, we had to keep going, networking, and growing our opportunities for success.
Was it at first, was it a little nerve-wracking? Because you get, like, it's the same thing. I've been at the station here for more than two decades. And you say no to the calendar, you get into a routine. You know what to expect. You know, there's, you know, nothing ever always goes according to plan. But you have an idea of what your January is going to look like, when you can take off, when you're probably not going to be able to take off. For that first year or so, was it a little nerve-wracking being new and not having everything as firm as you had been used to for so long?
I wouldn't say nerve-wracking. I would say challenging, yes, because there could be a day where the phone doesn't ring. And my wife would say, that's a good thing for you because you can catch up on everything else that you haven't done yet, or you can plan ahead. So those became blessings if the phone didn't ring every day. But what I also did was I took advantage of the networks that I have created over time, and I would schedule a lunch or a coffee with somebody every day. So as I was starting, I would schedule a lunch or coffee and say, let's get together. You know me. I know you. I know what you need. You know what I can do. Let's talk about it. Is there an opportunity that we can create something together? And if it does, yes, let's go. And if not, is there anybody in your network that you can connect me with that I can meet with and say, let's do the same thing? So for the first 6 months to a year, it was a lot of coffees and a lot of lunches and a lot of networking that helped fuel the engine of Ike Richmond Communications.
How long do you think it took till your company kind of became, you became confident and you knew what the next mile of the road was going to look like?
I know the exact day. I know the exact time. It was when the Philadelphia Eagles won the NFC Championship and were going to the Super Bowl. And I spoke to the Philadelphia Eagles and I said, I want to do the celebration because you're going to want to be on the floats. You're going to want to be on the team stuff. I want to do that. And they said, we can't talk about it, but we know what you're talking about. We know what you want to do. We'll get to that point when we get there. So we watched the Super Bowl that night against the Patriots, and I'll never forget it because we're waiting and waiting. And that last pass, if you remember, Tom Brady threw it into the end zone and dropped it. We have a gig. We're doing the Super Bowl celebration. And that's when it was. And I was standing on the Art Museum steps on the parade route with all the media there saying, this is going to work. This is going to work. That was our day that we made it official. Like, this is going to happen. And we've been blessed to do two Super Bowl parades, and I'm ready to do a third.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Ike Richman in just a few moments. But right now, I want to tell you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio Studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles. And finally, take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic and HR-V from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Books KBB.com Best Value brand. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Ike Richman of Ike Richman Communications. I'm curious, without any specifics, you talk about all these different places and people you've represented and things you've worked with and all. Everything is not sunshine and rainbows, I'm sure. How do you handle working with someone or an organization that maybe is kind of difficult, either in not wanting to collaborate as much as they have a vision and you're going to do our vision whether you like it or not, or just personalities that are eccentric, things like that? Like, how much of a challenge is it from the job you have to do to deal with people that just maybe are difficult in one way or another?
I don't see anybody being difficult. Sometimes there might be more challenges than others, but I'm adaptable. I like to think that I'm very adaptable and accommodating, and I'm reasonable, and I listen intently and say, let's find a way to make this work. Let's find something that's going to work for you and your organization. And that's how we resolve it. And listening intently to say, what is your ultimate goal here? If your ultimate goal is to do this, let's try it this way. And if it doesn't work, I'll try it again your way. Or let's try it your way first. And if it doesn't work, maybe we'll revisit it. And it's worked every time. And I usually lean to the former first. I say, let's try your way first. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. And if it works, great. And if not, we'll try it a different way. And it works almost every time.
So I want to talk a little bit about your backstory. When did you figure that PR was going to be your direction? Your family has deep roots in Philadelphia sports, we'll talk about. But when did you think this was the road you were going to take?
I was a student at the University of Maryland in College Park. I volunteered at our campus radio station. And guy was in the lobby outside. You could see out the window. There was a conversation going on. And I said, what's going on? And they said, well, we need somebody to go to the hockey game tonight. The Washington Capitals are playing the Philadelphia Flyers. And we need somebody to go to the game and get some audio tape of sound bites of the players after the game. I said, I'll go. I like the Flyers. So I'm sitting in the press box next to the PR director for the Philadelphia Flyers. I asked for his number and information. And when I graduated, I reached out and asked for a job. The only job they had at the time was to work in the press box on game nights. I said, I'll take it. So I'm there my first night, and who walks in? The legendary voice of the Philadelphia Flyers, Gene Hart. And I said, Gene, I have been trying to get a job in radio in Philadelphia, and no one is taking my calls. No one's returning my letters, because we didn't have email at the time. And Gene told me who to call at the sports radio station and told him to call the next morning, and I did. And they brought me in and said, can you work the board? Can you produce the show? And I said, yes. They said, great. You can start tomorrow. Your shift is 3 o'clock to 11 o'clock. Well, what am I going to do all day long until 3 o'clock? I'm a morning person. Well, wait a minute. I'm working for a sports station. I'll use my press pass. And I started going to press conferences. I started going to team practices. And I was at the Spectrum during a Flyers morning skate, and a guy says to me, who are you and why are you always here? And I said, oh, Ike Richman. I work at a sports radio station here in Philadelphia. He said, did you ever think of a career in PR? I said, I like where I live. I don't want to move to Puerto Rico. He said, no, PR is public relations. And I said, I love to be in public relations. So he said, do you have any writing samples? And I said, sure. So he said, can you bring them in tomorrow? So I said, yes. So I went home. I started writing my samples because I didn't have any. And I brought in writing samples and said, I want to be PR at the Spectrum. And they took a shot on me. They must have saw something in me. Larry Rubin was the guy. He was the master of PR. He was my mentor. He's no longer with us. But everything that is in me, I learned from Larry. And I apply everything he taught me still today. And that's how I like to think that I've made it to where I am because I take advantage of opportunities that exist. If I didn't go to the Cap Center and sit next to Mark Piazza, what would have happened? If I didn't ask Gene Hart in the press box to network with the radio station, what would have happened? If I didn't go to the Spectrum that morning and meet Larry Rubin, what would have happened? So everywhere I've gone in my career is take advantage of an opportunity that existed. Peter Lukow was the president of Comcast Spectacorp when I was there. And Peter just would ask like, hey, would you mind doing this? No problem, Peter. Hey, would you go here for this? No problem, Peter. Ed Snyder would say, hey, I need you to do this. No problem, Mr. Snyder. And it was always, yes, let's just keep doing these. And I think doing those helped me to get to where I am.
Given how that was not something you were expecting to do or not necessarily the career path, how long did it take you to feel comfortable once you got that job with Comcast Spectacorp?
I never took one PR public relations course in my college days. I never did. I studied communications. I took a couple courses in journalism to write, but I never knew I'd have a career in PR. But who would I report to once I started? The guy that I sat next to in the press box at Cap Center, Mark Piazza, said to me on the first week, he said, Ike, don't worry about what you know and don't know. Don't worry about who you know or don't know. You take care of people, you're going to do great in this business. And that was the best advice that I could have. Just take care of people. Listen to them. Help them get to what they want. Help them achieve their goals. And that's been my driving force. That's been the best advice that I ever had from anybody in business. I've had a lot of great advice, don't get me wrong, but Mark gave me that on my first week, and I apply that still today.
Do you remember the first big thing you worked on?
The circus.
Okay.
The circus, Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. I'll never forget it because they handed me a binder and said, this is your publicist guide. You read this and you'll know everything about the circus. I said, great. I didn't read it. I picked up the phone. I called the Philadelphia Inquirer and Michael Klein. You could ask Mike Klein. He's a reporter still at the Inquirer. He knows. I called him. I said, Mike, the circus is coming. He goes, and? I said, Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey. He goes, the greatest show on earth. I said, you've heard of it. He said, yeah. He said, what about it? I said, it's coming to the Spectrum. He goes, comes every year. I said, it's an all new show. He said, that's what the guy said last year. So he said, you're new, aren't you? I said, yeah. He goes, did they give you a publicist manual or something? I said, they did. He said, you didn't read it, did you? I said, no. He said, go back and read it. And find a reason for me to dedicate space in my column. Why should my readers care? Great advice. Great advice. I still use that line today. Why will your readers care? I'm going to make them care. And I went back and I examined that book. I read it forwards, backwards, upside down. And guess what? There was a clown from Margate, New Jersey, who auditioned at the Spectrum and went to clown school and was coming home for the first time. And I called Mike and I said, I got the story. And he wrote about it. That was the first event that I did, the first story I booked. And I still talk to Mike today and we still laugh about that moment.
How much of a rush was that for you?
Incredible. Incredible. It's like, I can do this. I can do this. And it was that moment that led to more of those great moments. And people would kid, they'd say, you're like a modern day P.T. Barnum because you get inspired by creating things that are unusual. And that's what I tried to do with my career is come up with photo opportunities that are just so outrageous that get everybody talking and make things happen. And another signature moment for me was 1999. We just were awarded. The Republican National Convention was coming to Philadelphia. Guess what else is coming to Philadelphia? Before that, the circus. So we decided to say 18 Republican representatives are going to take a taste test tour of Philadelphia's finest restaurants. Everybody came out because everybody was so wrapped up that the Republicans were coming. They didn't realize the 18 representatives of the Republican Party were 18 elephants from Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey. We had all the media out there. That was one of the great PR events that just people came out and televised and shown and said, this guy's the P.T. Barnum of our modern era.
Ideas like that, do they come to you in the moment as you're working on them? Or how often do you get ideas for this would be good in general or I like this concept. Eventually something's going to come where I can use this. Like how often the stuff come in the moment, like in the meeting where you're like, well, we should do this, this, and this. How often are you driving home? Like, that's it. That's what we're going to do.
The inspiration is this. How many people have a TV in their kitchen? How many people have it in the background and they're making dinner and they're not really watching the TV? So they're kind of over there stirring the pasta and they're looking over their shoulder. And the idea is you want a moment that the TV station shows something that you have to stop what you're doing, say, wow, what is that? What is happening? I'm putting down the pasta noodles. I'm stopping the stove. I'm turning up the volume because I don't know what that is and I need to know what that is now. That's the inspiration. But where does that creativity come from? A lot of times it just comes from the top of my head. It does come from a long car ride, or it does come from a morning workout or a run or a bike ride. And I have to carry a notepad because if I'm out for a jog and I don't write it down, I'll forget it. So a lot of that does come from those intense moments and says, oh, this would be unbelievable if we did this. And I write it down and I bring it up and I say, what if we did this? One of a fun events that we did, Matt, was when we make ice at the Flyers games. We paint the lines, et cetera. We always would invite the media. And a guy said, we do that every year. Like, can we take a year off from doing that? I said, no, we're not going to take a year off because it's always a great media event. People come out. They want to see it. He says, that's like watching paint dry. I said, well, then let's make it fun. Let's invite people out to watch us make the ice. And he goes, who in their right mind is going to watch paint dry? Who's going to do that? So I said, let's go for the Guinness Book of World Records. How many people will come out to simultaneously watch paint dry? So we had 196 people come out. Of the 196, an Associated Press writer and photographer came out and did an entire story about it and said, so wait a minute, the capacity of the arena is 19,600. You had 196. So you said 1% of your building capacity came out to watch. I said, sure. This story got picked up in every newspaper in America. And one of the local TV stations picked it up and shared it with their affiliations. I got calls from Buffalo, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Florida. Every NHL market said, you're killing us. I said, why? They said, because they showed your team making ice. We're making ice next week. I doubt they'll come out. But you got them to come out and watch paint dry. And they interviewed your fans. And that's what made it silly. But that's what was the success formula to get people to come out and to get people talking about what we're doing. And that's been the fuel for what we do as communicators.
It's so creativity driven. How often do you have to recharge? Do you hit moments where, not burn out, but where you just, you've spent so much energy, you need time to let it build again?
No, I go for a morning walk or a run or a bike ride every day. And that's where I get recharged. And I don't like to look back at the success of the event. I will always, but my next event is my next event. And as soon as that event's over, my next greatest achievement will be the next event. And I focus immediately as soon as PGA Championships, when you and I were together at Aronimink, as soon as that was done is let's get right into World Cup mode. And as soon as World Cup mode was done, it's like, let's get on to the next event. Let's keep moving. What's next? And always recharging on the ride home from the event. And the next morning on the run or the walk or the ride, it's time to get right into the next thing.
What has been some of the toughest nuts to crack as far as finding a way to publicize something? Are there – and I don't mean because the event wasn't good or the people involved, but just like you talk about all these great ideas that have come and they've worked and they've come together. Have there been some where it's just been difficult to get over that hump to find that right hook, to find that right angle?
Sometimes you may have an event or a show that you bring up to somebody and say, hey, I have a great opportunity for you to talk to this person about this. And they say, not really interested. And you try somebody else, not really interested. So you go back and you say, let me think about this and let me look at this person's bio. Maybe they did something in school. Maybe they did something. Aha, they used to do this. And now I found somebody else that does this. Maybe we can talk about that. I've had that happen a couple times. It sounds a little crazy, but we did Disney on Ice many years ago. We did Aladdin. It came on ice, and it was right around the time, unfortunately, the incident with Nancy Kerrigan happened at the U.S. Nationals. And I had been calling people, hey, do something on Aladdin. They said, we're not interested. And then we found out that one of the guys that skated grew up with Nancy Kerrigan, and he was just distraught. And he said, I'd be happy to tell anybody anything they want to know about Nancy. So they came out. I said, if you don't mind, can you just mention that he's also skating as the genie in Aladdin? So we ended up getting some publicity out of it. Unfortunately, it was at Nancy's expense, but it's just trying to peel those layers off and say, hey, what's going to work? And I think that's what really works for Ike Richman Communications is I like to think in the mind of the journalist, not so much in the mind of the show. So I try to think of the producer, the assignment editor, the manager, the reporter, or the station news director. What's going to work for my newscast? If I put that hat on and I could see the picture, then I have a story, and then I could pitch it and say, I think this would work great on your air if you did this. And then I could go back to the show and say, let's try to make this work. Let's give them this interview. Let's set this up, and it works.
Specifically, since you've had Ike Richman Communications, has there ever been a client or an event or something you've turned down? We're just not a match. Without getting specific, I don't want to put anybody on blast, but have you ever had thumbs across that I think there's probably other companies that could help you better?
I have done that. I have great friends in this business that I might say, this event is a better fit for this person. I like it. I want to help you, but I want to give you results. And for me to give the results that you want, I think it'd be better if you partnered with my colleague on that. And they say, I appreciate that. I appreciate the honesty because I don't want to just take on a client and say, oh, yeah, we can do that and fail. I like the challenge. I'm willing to do that, but I'm better off if you go with this person. And they say, thank you. I appreciate that. And it works.
Do you feel like there's ever a point where you failed?
I don't know if there's a point where I failed because I like to think that we've always given our best at every event and made the clients happy. And if the client's not happy, then it could be a failure. But if we've generated enough publicity that they've sold enough tickets and they've moved the needle, it's a success. So I don't think anything's a failure. But sometimes if a client says, hey, we've reached a point where we're no longer going to work together, they said, I'm sorry to do that to you. And I said, well, why are you sorry? They said, well, you know, we're letting you go. I said, I take that as a compliment. They said, what do you mean? I said, you brought me on to help you. You brought me on to educate you on what PR is. You brought me on to train your staff to identify PR opportunities. You brought me on to help grow your business. If you're letting me go, we've achieved your goal. I'm okay with that. And it works. And they appreciate that.
Mentioned when you got that first booking, the rush. Do you feel like you still get the same rush now as you did when you achieved things like that early in your career?
Absolutely. Matt, I was at 4 a.m. at Aronimink because we were on TV booking a live show. Yes, we were staying late at night at the World Cup until 12:30 at night because we were in that rush. That rush is there every time, and it's achievable. And that's what drives me. Every day I want that rush. So yes, I celebrate those moments all the time.
Is there an event, a sport, a musician, whatever, that you were indifferent, agnostic to coming in? You just weren't familiar, just wasn't on your radar, and you came out as a huge fan, like just working with them or seeing what it was up close. It really just sucked you in where before you had that job, it wasn't something you followed.
I would say Garth Brooks. I knew country music, but I'm a city guy. Like, what am I doing listening to country music? But here he comes in, and I start working with this guy, and he was unbelievable, the nicest guy. And I had said to him, he played six straight nights in Philadelphia, six straight nights. So we had Mayor Rendell at the time. We were going to give him Liberty Bells, and we're going to give him Flyers jerseys, and he was going to do all these media interviews. And he said he did every media interview. So I had all these interviews scheduled, and I said to the publicist on the phone, for his publicist, I said, who do I set this up with? They said, just have the room ready. You'll know. I said, like, what time? They said, have it ready at 4 o'clock. I said, well, who's my contact? They said, don't worry. At 4 o'clock, it'll work itself out. So I'm in the room. I have all the media ready, and this guy comes in like a jumpsuit with a baseball hat. He says, I'm looking for Ike Richman here. I said, Ike right here. He goes, I'm Garth Brooks. I said, hey, Garth. He goes, what do you got for me? We sat down, and he just thanked everybody and just was polite as could be. And then we went into the room to present the jerseys and the Liberty Bells. And he said, Ike, can I speak to you in the hallway for 1 second? I said, sure, Garth, whatever you need. He said, you're going to give these Liberty Bells to me, but I want you to look at the ticket for 1 second and read to me what the ticket says. I said, it says Garth Brooks. He says, what does it say below there? It says, with special guest Trisha Yearwood. He said, yes, that's correct. And he said, where's her Liberty Bell? I said, Mr. Brooks, we'll make that happen right away. He said, thank you. He said, I'm not accepting one of those if she can't accept one also. So we had to call the city. They had to run one down, and we gave Liberty Bells. The last night of his shows, he came off the stage, and he walked over to every single staff member that worked his show and said, thank you for making this happen. Came over, hugged me, and said, thank you for everything. I'm a fan to this day because he was genuine, nice, personable, and I loved every minute just talking to him.
Going along with that, do you feel like you ever get starstruck?
Oh, all the time. All the time, but you have to act professional. Like, I've been fortunate. I met Bill Clinton. I've been to the White House. I met Mick Jagger. You're like talking to them, but you have to remember, like, I would just talk to them like a regular person. And I always remembered, like, when you get home or you're on the weekends, nobody really wants to talk about what they do all day long. So why would you ask them what they do all day long? So I would just say, hey, I'd come up with something like, did you watch the Monday Night Football game, or what do you think of the Super Bowl? And they start unloading. They start talking. And I would just have conversations, and people really enjoyed that. They really appreciated me not saying, oh, where did this inspiration for this song come from? Or how come you played that way last night when you could have played this way? You know, like, I just try to be different with them. And I think that has worked for a lot of them.
Time for another break. More with Ike Richman coming up. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio Studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles, and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic and HR-V from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Books KBB.com best value brand. Now on 101 with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Ike Richman. So I mentioned your family. Your grandfather brought the Sixers to Philadelphia. I guess he bought the Syracuse Nationals and brought them to Philadelphia. Unfortunately, he passed before you were born, and you're named for him. Am I correct on all that?
100% correct.
When did you become cognizant of that as a child?
We grew up, my brother and I, going to 76er games with my dad. And when we would go to the games, we had to always go say hello to this guy, Eddie Gottlieb. We didn't know who Eddie Gottlieb was. My father would say, we're going to see the mogul. And we would talk to the mogul. And it didn't hit me until later in life that this guy was one of the founding members of the NBA. We would go to the Sixer games and go in the locker room at halftime like it was no big deal. We didn't know what was happening. My brother and I collected ticket stubs. I still have every ticket stub that I found on the concourse of the Spectrum, and people have given me over the years. But it was about my father. Will Chamberlain was part of our family. My grandfather represented, my father represented, and Wilt would come to the house. I didn't know anything about it until I got to high school and said, something's like, I would say to my dad, like, all right, I need to know what's really happening here. He said, well, your grandfather was the original owner of the 76ers and you're named in his memory. Like, it was like a lesson then. And I never forgot that. And wherever I went, I'm proud to wear the name. That was my grandfather's. And this December will be 60 years since this past December was 60 years since he passed away. But I try to make him proud, or my dad proud, and my family proud as best as I can.
So, like, you talk about that lesson in learning. Like, would you say stuff to friends like, oh, yeah, Will Chamberlain, da-da-da-da, and did they look at you like, wait, what? Were there moments where this stuff that was just life for you?
It happened once. When I was in middle school, a good friend of mine, Josh Cohen, and I, we talked about it. I said, Will Chamberlain was at my house. And he said, yeah, sure, right. And he said, the next time he's at your house, you need to call me. And I said, okay. Well, it was ninth grade. Will was at my house, and Josh Cohen and I had kind of gone different paths. We were still friendly, but we didn't see each other as much. And I called him. I said, Josh, he goes, you're calling me? What's going on? I said, I promised you need to come over. He ran right over and got to see Wilt in my house. So it's sort of like it reminded me of the Brady Bunch episode when Joe Namath was on, if you remember that one. It was one of those moments. But I'm not a bragging kind of guy. So I'm a kind of more of a humble guy. This is who we are. This is how we live. So I was never really in a saying, oh, well, this is us. But it was that moment I did because I promised Josh that I was going to have a moment that he could have with Wilt, and he came over and got to meet him.
What was it like being around Wilt? The personality was outsized like the physical specimen, it seems like. I never had the opportunity to cross paths with him, but just a fascinating human being.
Larger than life, a presence everywhere he went, the greatest NBA basketball player that we have ever seen. Now, you could argue Jordan was better. You could argue LeBron. I didn't get to see Wilt as much as others did. I got to see Jordan a lot more, but they changed the game to stop Wilt from scoring basketball. If you remember back in the day, you could actually run up to the free throw line and shoot. Wilt would run up and dunk, and they had to stop it and say, okay, you can't run anymore. So they would always make attempts to stop him from scoring. They added a step for Jordan, the three-step rule. So I never really got to see him, but he was a presence larger than life, and when he would – come back to Philadelphia, people just flocked to see him because he was one of us, and he became this giant international success, and he became an NBA champion, and we never forgot that. And I think that's a thing about Philadelphia. When we see one of our own come home, we rise to that. Will Smith just came back here July 4th. Everybody was happy to see Will Smith. If Sylvester Stallone comes in here, same kind of thing. Bradley Cooper, we love somebody that's from here that goes out and does something and comes back. We recognize greatness like that.
And once again, reading up on your family and your story, Wilt at one point, if I read the story correctly, moved into your dad's room when he was a kid.
It was actually my uncle's room.
Was it your uncle?
Yeah, it was
okay.
My uncle David. And my uncle David wrote a book about that, Ike, Wilt, and me, because he was still in high school and Wilt was living at his house at the time, obviously before my time. But the story's in the book, and my uncle David shares that story quite often, and we have great memories. Wilt always would share great stories about my grandmother and grandfather. And my father used to tell us a story that the night the 76ers won the NBA championship in San Francisco, the players all gave Wilt the game ball and said, Wilt, we couldn't have won the championship without you. And Wilt said, went around the room and got everybody to sign the ball. And when the plane landed in Philadelphia, he flipped the ball to my dad and said, that's for your mom, and tell her thanks. And the ball's in my brother's – it's in a case in my brother's house. We still have the ball. But Wilt meant a lot to our family, and obviously our family meant a lot to him.
Is there anything, any event on a bucket list type thing that you would like to be involved in that you haven't been to this point? That, I mean, realistically is something that you could get a role in somehow. Is there any – because, I mean, we can go through the concerts you've helped promote, obviously hockey – you've been involved in the Super Bowl, like on and on and on and on. Is there anything you haven't done that you like, you know, before I hang this up, I would love to get a piece of X, Y, and Z?
There's two I want to do. I want to do the ribbon cutting at the new arena when the Flyers and Sixers open the arena. I want to be at the ribbon cutting for that. And I would love to do the Olympics. That's like of all the events, the Olympics seem to be like the best of the best. And I would love that if I think it's coming to Los Angeles next, but if it came ever to this side of the country, I would love to do the Olympics. But those are the last two things. But I'm not done. I'm not done. I don't want anyone to think I'm done. I got a long way to go. I want to keep going. But in my career goals, I want to do the ribbon cutting for the new Flyer Sixer Arena, and I would love to do the Olympics. But we have a long way to go. I want to keep going. There's more to go.
You, at one point, for a good amount of time, you did all the communication specifically for Ed Snyder, correct?
Yes.
What was it like to work with him? Because he is one of the few people that in the public eye that when you talk to people that were close to him, there is a reverence there. It's a respect mixed with love, and it's almost universal from everyone that had a close relationship with him. What was it like for you specifically? And how did that role of handling his communications, did that come about? Was that just part of the job as a vice president with Comcast Spectacor?
It was one of those roles that just kept growing. And it really came to solidify itself when we were closing the spectrum. Because as we were closing the spectrum, we started tapping onto Ed a little bit more. Ed would, at that point, it was 2009, he would only really talk high-level Flyer stuff We had already opened the Core State Center, now the Xfinity Mobile Arena. So he wasn't doing as much publicity at the time. But when we were closing the Spectrum, that was his baby. So we started doing a lot of interviews. And that was right at the same time, 2010, when the Flyers went on to the Cup Finals. So in 2009, I'm giving you a little bit of a timeline, we announced we're closing the Spectrum. He did a lot of interviews. And he says to me, "Ike, I'm done." I said, "What do you mean you're done?" He goes, "I'm done." I go, "What does that mean?" He goes, "Interviews." I go, "Today?" He goes, "Never. I'm done." I said, "For how long?" He goes, "Forever. I'm not doing any more interviews. I'm done." I said, "Okay." So I go down to my office. The phone rings. It's the producers from HBO Sports. They want to do a documentary on the Philadelphia Flyers. They want to call it Broad Street Bullies. It's a 60-minute documentary on the history of the two Stanley Cup teams. He says, "We'd like to interview Ed Snyder, please." I said, "Oh, great, guys. I just came from his office." So I went upstairs and he goes, "You don't listen, do you?" And I said, "Well, Mr. Snyder, this is the opportunity. Like, you don't turn this down." He said, "Why?" I said, "It's HBO Sports, national network television. They're doing it. Doesn't cost us anything. They're going to produce everything. All they need is you to sit down and do a quick interview." He said, "30 minutes. That's it. They get 30 minutes. When do they want to do it?" And I told him, he said, "Okay." So they set up multiple cameras and lights. He comes down and he sits down. He goes, "Look at all this stuff. This is crazy." And the guy says to him when he sits down, he says, "I'm really impressed. You found a way to get inner city kids interested in hockey. You created the Ed Snyder Youth Hockey and Education Foundation." And Ed starts to light up and he starts talking and he tells him, "Well, we needed this. Kids didn't have anywhere to go," and starts talking. And about 5 minutes in, Ed looks at me. He goes, "Are we going to start the interview?" He goes, "Oh, I've been rolling the whole time." He goes, "Great, keep going." And they start talking about the Flyers and Ed lights up and they start talking about the Russian game and the Stanley Cup. I look at my watch. Matt, it's been 93 minutes. I told him it'd be a half hour. So the producer finally says, "I think that's it. I don't have anything else." He goes, "That was the fastest half hour I've ever had." I go, "It was 93 minutes. He goes, "That was incredible. Now I'll tell you, this is the Ed Snyder that a lot of people don't know." When we were done, Ed said, "Ike, you need to make me a promise." I said, "Sure." He said, "I want to be the first person that sees that." I said, "Okay." So like months go by to produce this thing. And the producer calls me. It was a Wednesday. He said, "Ike, on Friday, I have to go to the National Hockey League and show this to Gary Bettman. But you and I made a promise to Ed Snyder. So I'm going to drive down tomorrow, Thursday, to your office and show it to Mr. Snyder." I said, "There's only one problem." He said, "What's that?" I said, "He's in California, so he can't drive." He said, "Oh, that's crazy." So he books himself a flight out to California, and he calls me. He's driving up to Mr. Snyder's house in Santa Barbara, and he goes, "I'm nervous." I said, "Don't be nervous. One of two things are going to happen. He's either going to hug and kiss you, or he's going to tell you to get the heck out of his house." So about an hour and a half goes by and he's calling me. So I answered. He goes, "You were right." I go, "What happened?" He goes, "Hugged and kissed me." So I said, "Well, you got to hold on. I'm going to call you back. He's calling me on the other line right now." So, "Hey, Mr. Snyder, how's it going?" He goes, "That was amazing. I need you to make another promise." I said, "Okay, what's that?" He goes, "I want you to rent a movie theater. Find a movie theater and I want you to show it to the current team before it airs anywhere else." So we rented the Lowe's Movie Theater in Voorhees, New Jersey, right across the street from the Flyers skate zone. When the players were done, they came over and watched it. What happened that year? We went to the Stanley Cup Final. I like to think that maybe the inspiration of the movie got us to Game 6 against Chicago. We didn't win, but we came pretty darn close to winning the Stanley Cup. And I like to think that was part of it. The other thing is, when we closed the Spectrum, Snyder said, "You guys can do whatever you want to do." So I said, "Well, I want to do a documentary, I want to do a book, and I want to have a website where people can share memories." He said, "There's no budget, Ike, so figure it out, no budget." So we partnered with NBC Sports Philadelphia. They produced segments and did a documentary. Brad Now did that great little thing, and I saved the DVD, it's awesome. I met with the Daily News, they produced the God Bless the Spectrum book. They took all the risk, we shared our resources and archive, we got a book. And we did a website. And he said, "When we do the demolition, what do you have in mind?" I said, "Well, we're going to bring back the greatest people that were at the Spectrum. We're going to have Bob Clark speak. We'll have Dr. J speak. We'll have you speak. Well, knock the building and we'll be done with it. He said, okay. So it's now demolition day, if you will. And I go up to his office. It's 11:45. We're supposed to start at noon. He goes, Dr. J here? I said, he's there. He said, Bob Clark there? I said, he's there. He says, Bernie Perrant there? I said, Bernie's there. He said, how about the media? I said, media's in place. He said, how about fans? I said, there's about 1,000 fans here. He goes, great, do it without me. I go, do it now? You're going to tell me now, do it without you? We're leaving now to go. He says, I can't watch this. I said, Mr. Snyder, like, this is like, we're doing this. Like, you can't cancel on me now. And he goes, well, I'll go. I'll speak and I'll say a few things, but I'm not going to watch the wrecking ball. I can't. I can't. So I said, okay. And we go over. And as soon as they get ready, he got in his car and he left. And I thought about it. He was too emotional about it. It was too upsetting for him. But also, it was about the fans. That's what it was always about, the fans. He wanted that for them. It wasn't about him. He wasn't there because he wanted to be there or needed the credit. He was there only because the fans were there. And that's what it was about. And that's what he was always about, was do it for the fans. Do it for the fans. So those are two stories that tell you the kind of guy that he really was.
And I think the entire run with Ed Snyder at the helm, the moves might not always been the right ones. They may have been ill-conceived. But I go to my grave that no organization tried to consistently win like the Flyers did. They would make the move. They would never, you know, like I said, might not have worked out. Might ended up being a disaster, but everything they did was done with the idea of, let's try to win this year. Try to win this year.
Matt, nobody wanted to win more than Ed Snyder, and he wanted to win in the worst way and told everybody, let's find a way to make this team win. And that was what happened. Some moves didn't work out, and we fixed it fast, and some moves worked. I still think to this day, one of the greatest defensemen that I watched in our modern time is Chris Pronger. And if Pronger didn't go down with an injury after that cup final, I think we would have won a couple cups with him. I think we had the right lineup and the right leadership and the right team. It's unfortunate, and I think we're on our way back. I think the management level of the Flyers right now, with Dan Hilferty leading it, with Rick Tocchet as our coach, Danny Briere and Keith Jones, we have the right guys running the team the way it should be run, and I think we're not far from a run real soon. Look what we had last year. We have everybody back. We have a great team. And you saw what Danny tried to do, tried to sign a kid that he rolled with. It didn't happen, but he's out there as we're going to put our best effort to win the cup.
How difficult a moment when Ed Snyder passes and you're the guy that had been handling him specifically, obviously had developed a close relationship with him. Was that one of the more difficult professional moments to be grieving, but also you've kind of got a job to do to be the point person for everybody that wants to, you know, remember and honor him and all that?
It's hard to describe it, but it was an honor and a thrill to help tell his story. And it was my way of giving tribute to him and his family. And it was my way of saying, thank you, Ed Snyder. I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for you. So instead of grieving, I looked at it as an opportunity to tell that story and share his story and make his legacy everlasting. And I still, to this day, represent the Flyers and find ways to pay homage to Ed Snyder. And I also still represent Ed Snyder Youth Hockey and Education. And those two things are his legacy. And one of the greatest thrills that I have in my career is seeing those two organizations today work in tandem. Flyers Charities, Ed Snyder Youth Hockey and Education, and the Philadelphia Flyers were operating the way Ed would want us to operate. And he's been gone 10 years, and we're working together stronger than ever. And it's amazing to see it happen.
Media has changed so much over your career. You know, obviously, it used to be the daily newspapers were the thing that were the point. You wanted to make sure to get your things in the paper, and we would grow from there. Now, with social media and the splintering of media companies and everything, is your job harder, easier, or just different?
Different. I tell this story. The arena that is in South Philadelphia, which is now called Xfinity Mobile Arena, has had many names. Started as Spectrum 2. When we changed the name from Spectrum 2 to Core State Center, we sent the fax of the press release. When we changed from Core State Center to First Union Center, we emailed it. When we changed from First Union Center to Wachovia Center, we posted on social media. When we changed it again. You watch the evolution over time. You don't need to fax anything anymore. You don't need to email. We told people when we changed it from First Union to Wachovia, come down and watch us take the letters down, and they all came down. When we changed it from Wachovia to Wells Fargo, we just shot it ourselves and posted a video, and everybody shared it. So it's great that more people become mediums for us to tell our story. And it's how do you utilize social media to help convey what that is. So it's different. And imagine announcing a show back in the day in 1980, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band are going to come play the Spectrum. Well, you would call the radio station and they would pump it up, or you'd call the TV stations, you'd pump it up. Now, Bruce Springsteen just puts it on his social media. I'm playing at Xfinity Mobile Arena. Boom, sells out. So it's a little bit different, but it's a fun way of doing it. Look, you did that for all our events. The Flyers, what did they post? We're here today on Wednesday, July 15th, and the Flyers posted today our home opener, September 30th versus the Pittsburgh Penguins. They posted it. Everybody knows.
Is it tougher kind of going along with that? 30 years ago, you knew, all right, so-and-so is a Channel 3, so-and-so is a Channel 6, so-and-so is WIP. We got these guys at KYW. You had a general idea of the 15, 20, 30 people that you would be dealing with for the most part. It's a lot different now because of the splinter, but also just because people with a popular Twitter account or a popular TikTok account carry as much weight as a sports anchor used to. Is it hard to identify where the power media centers are now as opposed to when it was much more laid out before? Like I said, not better, it's different. Is it hard to find where to make sure your message is going to get maximum exposure?
I'll say your word of different is accurate. And you went 30 years ago and you said, well, you have categories of TV, radio, then you evolutionize and now you have radio, TV, print, online. Now you have radio, TV, print, online, influencers. And you look at your influencers, and if you identify 10 to 20 influencers and you add up their visibility online, you may get more views combined than any of the TV stations might, just because people are on their phone more frequently. So they have to be considered a prime target when you're announcing something or putting something out there. So have that in mind of making sure that happens. I'll give you an example. Just finished the World Cup. So at the World Cup, we get word at FIFA headquarters that the France team is coming in, and the France fans – actually, let's go with Ecuador. Ecuador is going to have a rally, and the Ecuadorians are going to rally at the Rocky Steps. So if I didn't tell people, how would they know? So my first call was to TV. You want to be here at this time because you're going to see some great spectacles. Call radio. You're going to come and see it. Call newspaper photographers. Hey, influencers. You really need to be at this event because the content, they call them content creators. I call them influencers. They love this. They said, this is amazing. I'm out here. I'm seeing this great pageantry. I'm doing this. That's where it lit up on socials. And that's where I realized, like, they are as much a part of this as anybody else in a medium. So an influencer is a valuable member of the media. They may not be an official member of the media, but in my eyes, they are, because having them there and showing that flavor and feelings of what was happening in Philadelphia helped amplify that event and made it even better.
Given everything we've talked about, favorite part of your job?
I just love connecting with people. I love when we do something fun and it gets on TV or it gets on social media and somebody says, hey, did you hear that this is happening? Oh, where'd you hear that from? They go, oh, I heard it on the radio. Oh, great. Like I don't want to say, oh, I had anything to do with that. I just love how people bring that up as part of regular conversation and we had something to do with it. That's a moment of pride. And I'm humbled by that. And I love that when people say, oh, I heard that or I saw that. And one of my favorite stories that I tell is my dad. He was my biggest fan and he watched the news regularly and he would leave voicemails. He would say, 5:35, Channel 6, clown visiting kids at a hospital, and just hang up. Or he'd call up and say, I'm watching NBC 10, it's 4:30, and there's a Globetrotter spinning balls with kids at a school, and he'd hang up. So years ago, the circus was in town, and they don't do it now because they don't have animals, but back in the day, we would give away elephant manure or elephant poo. We'd do a poo giveaway because the elephants ate all organic food. So the manure would be great for your garden. So we put out a press release and I get a call from KYW News Radio that says, we want to do a story about the manure giveaway. And I would say, okay, I don't really know enough about it. He goes, Ike, just read the press release that you sent us and I'll make you sound real good. So I said, okay. So we tape it and it runs every half hour all day long. And I get a phone call at my office. I go, oh, great. Let me answer this. It was my dad. He goes, yeah, I finally figured you out. I said, what's that? He says, I send you to the University of Maryland for 4 years so you could talk about poop on the radio. And that's how I will remember my dad as our biggest fan. And that's the impact that we have is we can change lives. We create memories. We create fun. We create excitement. We drum it up for everybody and we build it. And that's what Ike Richman Communications is about, is making things fun and helping tell your story.
Ike Richman, thanks so much for coming in. This was fantastic.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Matt.
And that will do it for this edition of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank PR legend Ike Richman of Ike Richman Communications for being our guest this week and coming in studio to chat. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.